The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, and the Dayton Public Library.
Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Jeremy Zimmerman. He's got a book out called Make Mead Like a Viking: Traditional Techniques for Brewing Natural, Wild-Fermented, Honey-Based Wines and Beers. Welcome to the program, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
When I saw this book, I said to myself, I have to read this. Mead has really made a comeback here in the last couple of decades, hasn't it? Some of our listeners probably don't know what it is. What is mead?
It's essentially a fermented honey beverage, an alcohol. A honey wine is probably the best way to explain it.
And you kind of got started on making your own mead by making your own beer. Is that correct?
Yes. I started as a home brewer of beer and hadn't heard a lot about mead, but I'd come across it more and more and decided to give it a try and just kind of went from there.
You're down there in Berea, Kentucky, and that sounds like a great area for making mead. Why is that? Is it because of the availability of good honey, good ingredients? What is it about that area that makes it good for making mead?
Well, we definitely have a big sustainability-focused community down here, so a lot of people keep their own bees in their backyards. There's a lot of people that sell local honey at farmers markets. I use a lot of local herbal ingredients and fruits and that sort of thing. So it's just a good community in general, and there's just a lot of access to good ingredients.
I understand before you wrote this book that you've been doing a lot of writing about this subject online, and you're kind of known. What's your handle? The Yeti?
Well, I started writing for earthandear.com, and Redhead of Yeti is what I went by there, and sometimes I'm just known as the Yeti. So.
Okay. Let's talk about the process of mead. I was astonished when I opened your book to read that you gave us pretty much a history of Norse mythology and where mead came from. And this was fascinating. I had never heard this story before. Do you want to give us a little capsule story of where mead supposedly came from in Norse legend?
Sure, yeah. Clearly the name of the book is Make Mead Like a Viking, so I felt the need to go back to exactly how you would make mead like a Viking, which means going back to Norse mythology. Mead is big in lots of other cultures too, but the Viking early Scandinavian culture was my focus. And essentially it's a huge part of their mythology. They have a very deep, rich mythology. And the way it started, to sum it up, there are a lot of different nuances to it, but Odin essentially went to the home of the giants, who were kind of had discovered me recently and were hoarding it, and he went and kind of tricked them into letting them have it and took it back to Asgard and accidentally let a bit drop down to Earth, which is known as Midgard in Norse mythology. And mankind kind of discovered it from there, and it became the drink of choice by their skalds, which were essentially poets, storytellers, and they imbibed mead and told stories.
You skipped the part about the dwarfs.
Yes, well, I tried to do a quick summary. I could go on for a while.
Okay, that's all right.
There's a lot of nuances to it, but I can touch on the dwarf part really quick if you like.
I love that illustration where the giant has them all on that little island.
Yeah, it's the giant sits on them. The way the giants got mead is the dwarfs had initially come across it, and they in Norse mythology they're just kind of nasty little unpleasant creatures, and they stole the mead from. Well, again, it's a long story as to how it even got to them, but yeah, they essentially got a hold of it, and there was just like a couple cauldrons of it, and that's all the mead that there was in existence. And they just got a hold of it. They had no interest really in drinking it because it was supposed to be a drink that, you know, made you sing and just have a good time and that sort of thing, and they just wanted to cavort around, and they, you know, traveled around Midgard just kind of being little turds about it, and then they eventually decided to go to the land of the giants, which is Jotunheim, and it turned out to be a bad idea for dwarves to pick on giants. So.
Well, I have some Scandinavian roots and roots from that part of the world, so I could picture my forebears huddled in caves drinking these various beverages, and you take us all through that history and then up to modern times, and I had never realized what berserkers were, but I'm thinking maybe I had some in my lineage.
Did you want me to kind of fill you in a little bit on?
Yeah, what was a berserker?
It's kind of one of those folk legends. There may be, it may be a bit hyperbolic, but I think a lot of it is probably true. When the Vikings went into battle, there was a certain group that would, some of the legends say they would just go into battle just buck naked, and a lot of the other legends say that they would at least be wearing some kind of wolf skin or a bear skin to look like they were, some kind of a terrifying animal. And they would just work themselves into a frenzy. They'd be foaming at the mouth. They'd just kind of go into battle, and anybody who got in their way, friend or foe, would just kind of be obliterated. And a lot of there are definitely legends that say that there's a certain type of mead that was made to bring them to that state, and very likely that had all manner of psychotropic herbs and who knows what that just kind of got them into this berserker rage.
Jeremy Zimmerman joins us. His book is Make Mead Like a Viking, Traditional Techniques for Brewing Natural, Wild Fermented, Honey-Based Wines and Beers. Traditional is a big part of that title because you eschew additives, chemicals, and this is pretty much your philosophy in life, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I came from, for lack of a better term, a kind of a homesteading background, just kind of grew up on the land on a northern Kentucky farm. And my mom was very into doing everything healthy and, growing and raising everything we could on our own. So it just kind of has always been part of my mentality. And I, again, took the title of the book literally, Make Mead Like a Viking. I felt that they obviously wouldn't have had homebrew stores. They wouldn't have had any kind of chemical sanitizers. They, the ingredients mead, like wine, requires things like tannins, nutrients, acids to kind of give it body. And you can buy those in powdered form at homebrew stores, but I don't really see a reason to do that when you can get that in nature. You can use oak leaves, oak sticks. There's a whole bunch of different things that are just available in nature where you can get all these ingredients.
And a key ingredient in making this is the wild yeast, and that's why you kind of take the middle path as far as sanitization and sterilization, because you don't want to kill off that wild yeast. You actually have implements where you kind of keep the wild yeast alive for years.
Yeah, again, that was another kind of traditional technique, not just with the Vikings, but with pretty much anybody who made alcohol up until, I guess, modern times is, often they would use a stirring stick, which it was called a totem, as in totem pole, totem stick or a magic stick, and those would be passed down through generations, and over time it would continue to build up wild yeast strains, and they would do the same thing with brewing vessels. So clearly if you go with the modern mentality and you sanitize everything, which the goal is to kill off as much bacteria and wild yeast as possible, then that's not going to work.
And before Prohibition, this kind of home brewing was fairly widespread across America, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, really, it was the only way to really get alcohol in a lot of cases. If you lived near a city center, there was sure to be a kind of a public house, which we call pubs now. Or there are certainly ways to get it from other people, but It was part of every farmhouse had its own homebrew, whether it be beer, whether it be mead, whether it be wine. It was just pretty common for, just like with cooking, people just kind of made their own booze.
Jeremy Zimmerman joins us. We're talking about how to make mead like a Viking. Let's talk about the basic ingredients. And the first one, we mentioned honey, but the first one, of course, is water. And that's a very important ingredient. And where you get the water is key, isn't it?
Well, it's in essence, you want good, clean water that you would drink. The cleaner the water, the better. And where you get the water plays a part, not necessarily in the overall flavor. I always push for spring water, but like with honey and all the other ingredients, I like the idea of making a mead that has everything local in it.
Mm-hmm.
Water from a local spring, honey from local bees, herbs, fruit for flavor ingredients. If at all possible, I like the entire batch of mead to be made locally. So, again, that doesn't necessarily affect the flavor in the end, but I think there's a certain thing to be said, of drinking something that you made knowing exactly where everything came from.
And certain honeys are better depending upon what kind of mead you want to make. And these honeys are affected by what the bees have been finding out there as far as you say you use something called sourwood honey. Now, I had never heard of that. Is that a tree?
Yeah, it's just a type of tree. I can't say off the top of my head what regions it's found in, but it's found in most of North America. And it's just, bees that have fed off the blooms, gotten their pollen from the blooms of that tree.
We get a lot of locust honey around here in Southwest Ohio.
I think locust would probably be fine. I can't think that I've actually used it, but in essence, most meads benefit from kind of lighter honeys, so I like to use a lot of clover, a lot of wildflower. Any kind of a darker honey might have kind of a more of a molasses flavor, and you can use that. It's just you have to keep in mind when you're making mead with that, it's not necessarily going to come out with a kind of a light flavor. You might end up with something a little bit funky.
Okay, now let's get to the tannins, nutrients, and acids. This is where you're really doing some fine-tuning. You talked about putting tree bark in there earlier. A lot of people are probably going, huh? And why would you do that for the tannin?
Well, the tannin you can get from homebrew shops that most people use in wine and mead making, that is essentially derived from a lot of these natural ingredients. All tannin is like, say you take a bite into a not quite ripe apple and you get this kind of, it's not really a tart. You're going to kind of pucker, but it's this astringent sort of a taste. And if overdone, that can actually make the meat kind of taste pretty bad. But if you don't put any of that in, then you're going to get kind of a flat, dead sort of a flavor. So the goal is to put just enough to kind of give it a little bit of body. And I did a lot of research, and not even just in the older texts I found, but there's still a lot of people that do brew this way today, and just a very common thing to use, oak leaves or bark. I think leaves might work a little better. Either will work. Essentially, bark leaves from deciduous trees, so oak, walnut, anything like that.
Mm. Jeremy Zimmerman joins us. His book is Make Mead Like a Viking, Traditional Techniques for Brewing Natural Wild Fermented Honey-Based Wines and Beers, published by a wonderful little publisher out of New England, Chelsea Green. And you obviously have done your research because from reading your book, I'm guessing you've made more than, two or three batches of mead in your life. How many do you think you've made?
That would definitely be hard to put a number on.
You've made it out of
that is because I make a lot of, even now, 1 gallon batches.
Uh-huh.
The typical homebrew batch is made in 5 gallons, which I make, but you can experiment a lot more. So I've always got all kinds of little 1 gallon jugs going with a bunch of different flavor combinations I'm trying out.
Wow.
5 gallons too.
And you've made mead out of mushrooms? I know you grow them.
Yes. Again, as I mentioned in the book, I don't really have any reservations as to what I will put in the mead, as long as it's edible. And that was, again, a traditional way of of making mead and wine and beer as well, is just to use whatever was available. And alcohol is a natural preservative, so that was sometimes the reason that people would do it. But yeah, the mushroom, the mead I have in the book is a mushroom garlic mead, and that is primarily a cooking mead. So you can make mead specifically for cooking, to baste mead in, that sort of thing, and it really just makes for a fine flavor.
I was doing some research myself on this subject, making home brew and homemade wine and beer and mead, and I found a quote from a book that came out in 1909 titled Old Time Recipes for Homemade Wine by Helen S. Wright. And in the introduction, she talks about how she went over to this lady's house, and she writes that, quote, cake and wine were invariably served as preliminary warning toward early departure. Here came in my first acquaintance with many varieties of homemade wines, over whose wealth of color and delicacy of flavor my eyes and palate longed to linger. Vulgar curiosity made me bold to inquire the names of a few. Imagine my astonishment when graciously told that the gay dandelion, the modest daisy, the blushing currant had one and all contributed their nectar to the joy of the occasion. I loved reading that because it made me think about all the different ingredients that you use in your meads, all the different flowers, and you can make mead out of just about anything, couldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, if it's edible, you can, not even just mead, wine, beer. If it's edible, you can make booze out of it.
Have you ever made bacon mead? I'm just kidding.
No, I have heard of recipes that involve using meat. There's an old medieval beer recipe in Charlie Papazian's classic homebrew book.
Huh.
I can't think of the name at the moment.
But
it essentially calls for putting an entire chicken into the batch of beer.
Wow.
I don't recommend trying that, but people have done it apparently.
Well, there's certainly been a renaissance. We're still recovering from the Prohibition. Most Americans drink beer that, frankly, isn't that good. A lot of the wines have additives. I know that there are some good commercial meads out there. You mentioned one in your book that I know is available here in Southwest Ohio. I think it's from Valley Vineyards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a good one. It's more of a sweet mead, and that's one thing that I always have to tell people, especially if they said, oh, I had mead once and I didn't like it. First off, mead is like wine and beer. There are so many different flavor possibilities. And the ones that are available, not all of them are great, but they do tend to be on the sweet side. And just because it's made from honey doesn't mean it has to be sweet.
Mm.
I tend to make more dry, semi-sweet meads, so you get a hint of the honey sweetness, but it's not necessarily just, you know, hitting your palate with just nothing but sweet.
I'm sure we've piqued the curiosity of some of our listeners. Can you give them a quick sketch of just what you do to make a batch of mead, just kind of take them through there, just the basics?
I will go ahead and focus on what I push for in the book, which is, I call it wildcrafted mead making, which essentially means using wild yeast and wild local ingredients. So most people that make mead these days and anything else, they'll buy their yeast from the store. So to make a batch of wildcrafted mead, I start by just mixing honey and water. The ratio varies depending on how sweet I want to make it, but I don't heat it. I might heat it up just a bit to help the honey and water mix together, but I want to avoid bringing it to a boil because there are a lot of good wild yeast and nutrients in the honey itself, and you kind of kill off some of the flavor if you heat it up too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I mix them essentially at room temperature, and I will throw in just a small amount of just some herbs, possibly, you know, often I do that in my yard and I just grab some bark or a leaf from an oak tree, a nearby oak tree, or something from my garden. If it's spring, I'll pick some wildflowers from my yard. And those are just to kind of help. They'll have wild yeast on them themselves, but they also have some other things in them, nutrients and tannins, to kind of help get it going. And I take my magic stick, my totem stick, which is an old stir stick that my dad used to make wine with, and really stir it up good. And then that's kind of how I get it started. I set it in a warm, dark corner in my what I like to call my booze room. And then I to get the wild fermentation, you want to stir it several times a day. So it can take up to a week. And then one day you stir it, and there's fizzing, there's all kinds of life that has suddenly come to it. And then I use that as the basis for whatever I'm going to make. I transfer it to essentially a jug, a narrow-necked vessel. Add in any other ingredients that I think it might need. And at that point, I cut it off from outside air by putting an airlock in it. And that's just a little gadget you can get from a homebrew store. But essentially, it keeps outside air and kind of bugs and stuff from getting in. If you have too much outside air, it will actually eventually sour and turn to vinegar. Mm. So that's what that does. And then you just, you know, at that point, I just kind of let it sit. And it can take from several months to a year for it to fully ferment. And then I bottle it. So that's kind of the essence of it.
In case you've just tuned in, my guest is Jeremy Zimmerman. His book is Make Mead Like a Viking, Traditional Techniques for Brewing Natural, Wild Fermented, Honey-Based Wines and Beers. And you have lots of photos in here, the equipment, pictures of you working with things, ingredients, lots of recipes. And there's some really interesting stuff in here. And just for example, here's a recipe for Peach Whorehound Mead, a respiratory and digestive tonic. Here's another one for Odin's Golden Tears of Honey, Joy Cinnamon Vanilla Metheglin. Is that the word, Metheglin?
Yeah, it's actually Odin's Golden Tears of Honey Joy is the name of the mead itself. And Metheglin is an herbal mead. It's any mead that's made with herbs or spices.
Wow. Well, this sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, it doesn't sound like that much work. It sounds more like a very rewarding hobby.
Yeah, if you make as much of it as I do, it can become a lot of work, but it is fun work.
Uh-huh. So how did you get into this particular lifestyle? Obviously, you grew up in a family that was into sustainability. I'm guessing you probably have somebody like Wendell Berry living across the road from you. I mean, how'd you get into this?
Well, he doesn't live too close to me, but I've got a few other folks who probably know him that live real near me.
Uh-huh.
I did grow up that way, but I also kind of left that lifestyle for a bit. It was always a part of me, but when I grew up in the farm in Kentucky, in northern Kentucky, I moved to eastern Kentucky, which is where I live now, in Berea, and I went to Berea College, which is a liberal arts college. And they, especially now, not quite as much then, but they have a huge focus on sustainability. But once I graduated from there with an English major, I headed out to Seattle, and that's really what got me into brewing and beer. So I started brewing beer up that way. And then when I came back to Kentucky, I kind of immersed myself in the sustainability, modern homesteading movement, and that's kind of what ended up leading to this book. A friend of mine, my cousin Leah's husband, Dan Adams, he started the site I blog for, earthandear.com, and he pushed me to write about mead. I'd been doing it a little bit, but he was getting a lot of hits on my blogs, and he thought maybe that might have something to do with the keyword or just the fact that people were wondering who this Yeti guy was.
Uh-huh.
Went from there to presenting at Mother Earth News Fairs, which are huge sustainability events that travel across the country. And then Chelsea Green Publishing found me through one of those, and I've had a lot of fun working with them.
They are a great little imprint. We had Gene Logston on the program a while back. I don't know if you know him. He has some books out on Chelsea Green.
Yeah, I almost put some of his quotes in the book, but they just didn't quite make it in. But he seems like a great guy. I'd love to meet him.
He is a great guy. He lives up in northern Ohio, and he one of his many books, he's written books about just about everything, manure, making liquor at home. I mean, he's quite a renaissance man.
Yeah, no, one of his books was an early influence for some of the stuff I've written.
Is that right? Yeah, he's really a pleasure to talk to. The book is Make Mead Like a Viking, Traditional Techniques for Brewing Natural, Wild Fermented, Honey-Based Wines and Beers. Jeremy Zimmerman wrote it. He was kind enough to find a phone to use out there in Berea. And Berea, they're the college that has a reputation for, don't they have a program where you work for your education?
work-study program. After I graduated, I would have had no student loans at all, but I did take a loan out for a class trip to Germany. So that was my only loan, was, you know, a couple thousand dollars to pay that off.
Mm.
But the rest of it I paid off through my first job was with the library, and then I ended up becoming editor of their newspaper, The Pinnacle. But a lot of people, there's a big crafts program, so a lot of my friends were potters, and some of them worked on the college farm. So there's all kinds of programs you can work on, but, you know, it's a lot of it, too, is paid for by donations by alumni and other people.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a really neat college and a really neat little town.
So many of these cultures, these ancient cultures, had honey-based fermented beverages, and I didn't realize that Ethiopia was one of them until I read your recipe for Dr. Yeti's Ethiopian fire mead. And what's this word? Is it tesh?
Yes. I talk a little bit on how it's supposed to be pronounced, but I won't even try it myself. Everybody,
okay.
I know it just says tesh, but there's kind of there's a T and there's a little apostrophe and then an EJ. And from what I understand, there's kind of a sort of a, some sort of a sound that goes there, but I don't even try it. But it's essentially Ethiopia's national drink, and it's a mead is what it is. It's a wild fermented mead.
And it's made in hollowed out gourds smoked over a fire. And you made a batch and even have a really nice label for it.
Yes. Yes, my good friend Stephen Cole, he's an illustrator, lives near Berea. Yeah, I might have him do some more labels for me, but I had to go in the book.
Yeah, well, this is beautifully done. The book is Make Mead Like a Viking, Traditional Techniques for Brewing Natural, Wild Fermented, Honey-Based Wines and Beers. I have just enough time for one more question. If we have someone out there who's wondering how they get started on this, other than reading your book, what would you suggest?
Well, I always say that it's very simple to get started, not to overthink it, but even if so, I still get a lot of questions. But in essence, all you need to just start a basic batch of mead is a quart or so of honey, a gallon jug. You can buy jugs at homebrew stores, or you can just buy a jug of cheap wine, finish that off. And just whatever ingredients you want to use. You basically get that honey and water fermenting. You can buy yeast if you want, or you can use my wild yeast technique. And, you know, again, that's all you really need to get it going. And there's just, you know, a bit to the actual technique. But look, ask around. You may find out that there are people in your community who make mead or at least brew or know something about it. And before you know it, you might have a group of people together who are making and trying all kinds of interesting meads.
Thanks for your time today, Jeremy.
No, thank you.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Jeremy Zimmerman. The book is Make Mead Like a Viking, Traditional Techniques for Brewing Natural, Wild Fermented, Honey-Based Wines and Beers. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.